Hello, everyone. This is Jeanette Brown, Editor-in-Chief of Clear Admit, here with the next episode in our Clear Admit MBA Admissions podcast series. I'll take a moment for any of you joining us for the first time to let you know that we've recorded a few of these that we'd love you to also check out. They are available on our website and soon will also be available via iTunes and Stitcher. So if you like what you hear, go back and check out what you may have missed. With that, I will start by saying that those of us laser focused on the MBA admission space know that US News is slated to release its highly anticipated ranking of best business schools later this month on March 20th. And that made us think that it might be a good time to talk about rankings in general and what role they should play for applicants who are trying to decide where to apply and ultimately where to enroll. And to help kind of think this through, I have invited Clear Admit co-founder Graham Richmond to share some of his wisdom gained over 15 years in the MBA admission space on where rankings are valuable and how much value you should give them. With that, I'll welcome Graham.
Thanks for having me, Jeanette. Yeah, I'm happy to talk about MBA rankings. They are a subject of much discussion in the MBA admissions domain. Deans of schools focus on them, applicants focus on them, and you know, even admissions officers are traveling for schools, promoting their programs, are always keeping an eye. I think that my exposure to the rankings has been principally through my work at in co-founding Clear Admit and working with the MBA applicant pool for many years now. I also served as an admissions officer at Wharton, and rankings were top of mind then as well. And they're kind of a controversial thing in that the schools that are ranked highly often shout it from the rooftops. Those who kind of slip in the rankings can be critical of those rankings. And I think we're critical of rankings here at Clear Admit at times because we find that they're sort of a shortcut for real research that needs to be conducted when you're choosing schools to apply to. So they can be helpful, and they're a lot of fun. People like to anticipate the release, as we're doing with this very podcast, in terms of U.S. News' forthcoming rankings for this year. But yeah, we kind of always say, use them, but, with a little bit of exercise some caution in using them.
And U.S. News is not alone in producing rankings. There's the Financial Times, the Business Week rankings, The Economist, Forbes, and then spinoffs of any of the above. Just this week, I think the FT came out with its best MBA programs for women. With so much out there, how do you know what to listen to, what to let go? How do you make sense of it all?
Yeah, I mean, you're right. There are so many rankings now. It seems like each year there's a new one that kind of comes on the scene, if not multiple. And I think we live in a, in a listicle kind of society now. People love lists. We have probably BuzzFeed to thank for that. But, rankings are lists, really, and people like lists. I think in the MBA admissions domain, Business Week, U.S. News, and the FT have been at this for quite some time and, tend to get a high level of participation from schools when they, ask schools to kind of submit data for the rankings and are just generally well respected. I think other rankings that are out there for different reasons are going to be less utilized by the applicant pool. So Forbes has an interesting ranking in that it's a return on investment ranking. So it's very much focused on what is it going to cost you to go to business school in terms of lost earnings and tuition and living expenses. And what is it, how are you going to come out on the back end of the program in terms of what are you going to make when you graduate? So that's kind of a very unique, very focused ranking that could be appropriate for some candidates who have an interest in the financial aspect of getting an MBA. Other rankings like The Economist ranking you know, I have to say the Economist ranking is the one that just, it's sort of like a mismatch with the caliber of that publication, because I think the Economist is a very high quality publication, and yet the ranking tends to be famous for very wild fluctuations in school ranking from year to year. And so that kind of has discredited it somewhat. So we often tell people to exercise extreme caution with that ranking. And I think that, you know, the truth is, at ClearAdmit, we're kind of very much on the front lines with the applicant experience. You know, we see how applicants make decisions. They share their results on our site. They love to trade gossip and explain reasons for choosing one school over another using our tools like DecisionWire. And so we know that these wild fluctuations you might see in some of the rankings, the more fringy rankings, are not really reflected in applicant behavior. So a school could go from number 5 to number 50 in a ranking, and yet we're not seeing that type of behavior change amongst where people decide to go. So we're very much focused at ClearAdmit on the applicant experience and the kind of, you know, the customer's always right sort of thing. And so we exercise some caution when it comes to the rankings that are more fringy. But there are a lot of them out there, and I would say if you're going to make your choices, I would say you start with U.S. News, Business Week, and the FT. Those are kind of the big three for me.
And starting with those three, you still might end up with vastly different lists.
Yeah.
How do you make sense of that? How do you use the rankings as a tool, even given these discrepancies?
Right.
And what part of the application process are the rankings the most useful, or at what parts?
So the first part of your question is that, you know, to respond to that, I think you're right. Like, you might have wildly different top fives if you look at these three rankings. I mean, you know, they've come more in line in recent years, but it can be frustrating. You know, you're sort of assuming that, gee, you know, if the school's the best in the world, it should show up on all these lists as number one, but that's not what happens. You know, there's some differences between the rankings. But we always argue that you want to use the rankings to build consensus. You know, if the school that you're interested in is always ranked, you know, somewhere between 1 and 15, it's probably safe to say across the three rankings or whatever that it's a top 15 school. Is it number 7 or number 9 or number 6 based on the three different rankings? Well, that's probably less important than the sort of, you know, affirmation that it is a top school. As to when you should use them, I would argue that they're most often utilized at the beginning, you know, at the outset when candidates are conducting research into schools and building a broad list of potential targets. So that's kind of the main time that folks use them. I do think some candidates refer back to them again at the end of the process when they have a couple of offers on the table and they're just trying to remind themselves, okay, I have these two offers and let me just double check where these two schools fall in the rankings, and let me see if there are any updates to the rankings. So obviously with U.S. News doing their ranking on March 20th, that ranking might be different than the one that candidates were relying on back in the fall when they built their list, which would be last year's, you know, U.S. News ranking. So we recommend that they're mostly, you know, that they mostly be utilized at the outset rather than at the end when you're trying to make a decision. But I know candidates, you know, refer back to them.
And what about So it strikes me that frequently Harvard and Stanford are vying for first and second or up there near the top. And yet the more I get to know about those two schools, the MBA programs they offer are vastly different and maybe not right for the same set of applicants. How does that all play out? Can you explain how, okay, maybe you're going to target Harvard and Stanford because they're always highly ranked, but what should your next step be? And shouldn't you want to then drill down into, would I prefer to be a member of a small class or a large class? Would I like to be close to the tech industry? Am I interested in a huge alumni network? Can you talk about how sort of you go from top ranking to really getting to know the schools and where they belong in your own ranking?
Yeah, I'm always amused by the candidates, and there are many of them each year, who build their list based on what they perceive to be the top five. So they'll just, then they'll openly admit it. Oh, I've applied to these five schools because they're the five best schools in the world. When, you know, you take a closer look at the schools and they're all really different and would be equipped to send people into different industries or certainly have advantages in specific industries or even just locations, you know, geographically. So that's where rankings have their limitation. You know, you can use them to build sort of an initial list, but as you correctly point out, Harvard and Stanford are really different. And I think, you know, even schools like MIT and Kellogg and Chicago and Columbia, I mean, they're all different programs. They're all really high caliber, but they all do things differently, whether it's teaching method or strength in placement to a specific industry. So it's important to dig deeper. I mean, the truth is you're not going to get into any of these schools if your essays have relied, you know, if your kind of MBA application has relied solely on ranking or something. You know, you need to dig deeper. You need to learn about what, you know, what each school, what makes each program unique and what you would do there as a student. And that's why we actually at ClearAdmit have been for quite some time now kind of shouting from the rooftops that rankings are fun, but the existence of an ordinal ranking, that is a kind of rank order of, you know, schools 1 through 20, is somewhat silly. And that, you know, schools kind of wait with like bated breath. Are we going to be number 6 or number 9 this year or something? And for us, those little fluctuations are kind of ridiculous. We think that a lot of these programs should be considered in tiers instead of in a kind of set order. And the example I would cite there is, you know, let's go back to some of the schools we were just talking about. Take MIT, Kellogg, and Columbia, for example. I mean, all three of those schools are terrific. They often jockey for position in the rankings and move up and down from one year to the next in that kind of 3 to 7 ranking range. And I think it's funny in some of the forums online, you'll see people, you know, really like staking their reputation on the fact that one school is better than the other because they, over the last 3 years, have ranked, you know, 0.1, you know, you know, percentage point higher in some of these rankings. So it's a little much. And we recommend that people start to think about tiers and start to think about, wow, if I got into these three schools, you know, it wouldn't be ranking that determines my ultimate choice. It would be, you know, what my career goals are, or, you know, what industry I'm kind of targeting and where I want to be. So, you know, for the marketer who wants to, you know, get a job in consumer packaged goods, heading off to Kellogg when admitted to MIT, Columbia, and Kellogg at the same time might be the best choice. You know, for the person wanting to get a job at Goldman Sachs or in investment banking, going to Columbia might be the better choice for someone, you know, again, admitted to those same three schools. So it really depends. And I think it's anyone who tells you that, like, materially, MIT is a better school than Chicago, hands down, that there's no debating it or something, like, it's kind of, you know, blowing smoke. Like, I don't think that that's true. I think that it might be better for certain things, and it might be better based on, you know, a candidate's fit with, you know, the learning, the way that they do their instruction in the classroom or things like that. So, yeah, we're big believers in tiers. We think there are multiple different tiers and that schools kind of batch together.
Which brings me to another idea, namely that before you turn to rankings, which again, you're recommending at the beginning of the process and then maybe again at the tail end, but even before that, it might make sense to really take stock of what matters most to you and then to understand how that list of criteria compares to the individual rankings' own methodologies.
Yeah, that's a good point as well. I think that, you know, if you're someone who is very focused on like career outcomes, you might, you know, take a close look at the Business Week ranking, because Business Week takes into account the views of employers and what they think about hiring kids from these different schools. Whereas if you're focused on like quality of the faculty or the caliber of your fellow students in terms of their GMAT scores and GPAs, U.S. News might be an appropriate place to start. And then finally, like with the FT, if you're really interested in kind of outcomes, both student satisfaction wise and salary wise, the FT focuses a lot on where are graduates, I believe it's 5 years out, that they use as kind of the benchmark. So they look at How have people done kind of post MBA, and what do they have to say about their programs afterwards? So you, if you know what's important to you, that can help guide you. I often recommend that people take all the rankings, put them into a spreadsheet, and then figure out how they want to weight them. If they want to make kind of an aggregate ranking or something that includes inputs from several different sources, but they could weight each of those inputs according to what matters to them. So, you know, if you're really focused on like your return on investment, the Forbes ranking might have a heavy weight in what you're doing in that kind of a model in Excel or something. So it definitely matters. You have to know what you want out of it and what's important to you before you start, you know, taking all these rankings and probably getting a little bit lost in them.
Yeah, I feel like I've trained myself whenever a new ranking comes out or the updated version of an existing ranking the first thing I do is go to the methodology page and remind myself of exactly how they're arriving at this list. And that gives me a sense of how much weight to put into it based on my own particular considerations.
Yeah, and I guess one thing that's kind of interesting is that it's good that you're reading the methodology, because the methodologies often change from one year to the next. And part of the cynic in me has always wondered whether those methodologies are changing because they want to sell more magazines and God forbid they come out with a ranking and it's identical to the year prior. That would be like a catastrophe, because who wants to read that, right? So I think sometimes there's pressure on these publications to kind of come up with something new each year and to tweak their methodology. And they always have very rational reasons for tweaking it, et cetera. But yeah, the rankings sell. U.S. News has a whole like cottage industry around it, right? I mean, this is their thing. And, you know, I'm sure that the FT and Business Week get their share of web traffic because of the rankings they publish. So we have to keep that in mind, too, that there's a lot at stake here. And yeah, making sure that you're familiar with the methodology and also just not getting overly sucked into rankings as the determining factor in what you do with your business school applications.
You made another point, I think, in a conversation we've had before about rankings being kind of like the cliff notes. Can you talk a little bit more about what that means?
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, as I said earlier, rankings and lists are, you know, people really are drawn to them, you know, kind of like, kind of like the way that insects are drawn to light, you know, just a really simple thing. But at the end of the day, the rankings don't tell the full story for some of the reasons we discussed earlier around, you know, well, what do you want to do post-MBA and how might, you know, your choice of school be influenced by that rather than by the numerical ranking that a school had. So the cliff notes, as we know, are, you know, the kind of cheat sheet for famous novels. You know, they don't tell the full story. You can't read the cliff notes and be the same as the person who read the full novel. So I think that, yeah, they're kind of a quick way to get a rough take on the landscape of management education, you know, kind of top MBA programs, but they're by no means the final solution. And you have to be really careful, just as you would be careful going in to take an exam on a great work. If you'd only read the cliff notes, that would be dangerous.
Right. And to make a decision about 2 years of your life and time out of the workforce and tens of thousands of hundreds of thousands of dollars spent, you don't want to be relying on the cliff notes. You owe yourself more.
Right. I mean, you should be talking to people who've graduated from the schools that you're considering. I know people who've gone, if they know they want to work at like Amazon, for example, they've actually gone and like, you know, contacted HR at Amazon and said, you know, these are the schools I'm thinking about. You know, do you guys have any preferences? You know, so there's research you can do that is, you know, far deeper than just, oh, well, this is the ranking, and so I'm going to follow it and just go to the school that's highest ranked.
And beyond rankings, of course, there's so many things to consider, from what you want to do after school to how you learn best and how a given school teaches, to how much access you'll have to the superstar professors, to where it's located geographically, and conflicts can arise too. Like, what happens if you'll be faced with a choice where a given school fits your personal needs in a way that's undeniable, but the rank is still higher and there's still that pull, and you might be tempted to ignore the fact that a lower ranked school fits your personal needs better mm-hmm. and go to a higher ranked school. What's your advice in those instances?
Yeah, I think this is a, you know, this is a good exercise for MBA applicants, because the same stuff happens when you get into an MBA program and you start, you know, once you're a student. I can recall many a budding entrepreneur who saw so many of his or her classmates heading off into like consulting that they threw their business plan out the window and just went and got a consulting job. So you have to be able to kind of ignore the noise around you, the rankings, you know, what the rankings are kind of calling you saying, just go to the highest ranked, when, as you said, there could be a program that is just a perfect fit for you that is maybe a bit further down. I think, you know, all these factors are really important. So take, post MBA industry. If you want to work in media and entertainment, going to a school in LA, you know, UCLA, USC, I mean, there are a number of schools, might be a good move, right? And you might actually turn down a school that's slightly higher ranked in order to be in the area that you need to be to network and to find the job you want, if that's your focus. Similarly, you know, if you're looking for really close-knit experience or a kind of teaching method like the case method, you know, you might really favor a school like Darden over a school that's even slightly higher ranked, right? So you need to figure out what's right for you and not be overly obsessive around ranking. Another thing that we've talked about in the past is, you know, what about if you have a partner or a spouse? That's a factor that can come in too. So, you know, you might get into a higher ranked program that's halfway across the US or across the world. But if your partner has a job in the city that another school has accepted you into, you know, then you kind of have to weigh that as well. So, yeah, there are a lot of factors. And I think that, yeah, the rankings, as we said, are kind of a quick and dirty way to get a sense of the landscape. But you have so many other things you're going to have to consider. As we said, industry, geography, the existence of a partner, learning methods, size. I mean, there's just so many different factors that you have to take into account.
You mentioned one thing sort of off the cuff before, but I think maybe it bears returning to, which is that even though the schools are aware of the rankings and are happy when they are more highly ranked, you do not in your admissions interview or applications or anywhere else in the process want to acknowledge the fact that the school's rank played any role in your decision to go there. They want to know that they are special to you and that you understand exactly what their school is about apart from any rankings, and know that that's the place for you. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, that's the bit of, you know, that's the huge piece of advice in this podcast. So everyone listen up to what to what Jeanette just had to say. I interviewed for Wharton for quite some time, and it's interesting, the number of candidates who actually said, oh, well, it's, you know, when I had asked them why Wharton, they'd say, oh, well, number one in Business Week last year, you know, and you're kind of like, I mean, and they didn't mean to sound foolish, but they did. And yeah, you don't want to talk about rankings in your essays, in your interviews. It just should be a non, you don't want to bring it up. I mean, I think that schools know that candidates look at rankings and that rankings may influence, but you need to convince the school that you know a lot more about them than a number, that you know that they're uniquely suited to help you achieve your career plan, or that you're just absolutely drawn to the way that, to the methods of instruction that they use, or to some special program or course offering that they have, or even to the strength of their, you know, kind of alumni network in a specific market or domain. I mean, showing them that you've conducted this research and have really been thoughtful about what's right, as opposed to saying, oh, you were number one last year. You know, that's the way to go. You don't want to reference the rankings. And that's a really good point. So if anyone's applying, always remember that.
So to recap, we understand that rankings captivate attention, our own included. The U.S. News is coming out in a couple weeks, and we'll all be watching with bated breath. But that said, as people who have been privy to the admissions process for many, many years now and seen rankings go up and down, sort of the takeaway advice, I think, is to use rankings early in your process, look for consistency that suggests that there are schools across the rankings that meet your needs, consider a tiered ranking and let go a little bit of the need to line things up ordinarily and recognize that schools that fall within a similar tier may be equally adept at meeting your needs. What else have, and not to reference the rankings in any interaction with the admissions committee.
Yeah.
And to recognize that it's complex and there are going to be things in your personal life, in your professional goals, in how you learn and how you want to be taught, in where you want to live, that may run counter to the rankings, and you're going to have to sort of suss that out.
Yeah, you have to be brave at times, and because it's easy to just follow the rankings and let them dictate kind of where you're going to go or something. And I think that's the problem, is that when people get into school, often the rankings reemerge as a factor because they're telling friends, family members about their results. And those folks are often only familiar with the rankings. They haven't obviously done the deeper research because they're not the applicant. And so they're saying, oh, you got to go here. It's a, you know, I heard it was ranked this or that. So you have to be brave and you have to find the right, the right school for you. And I think one thing that gets lost in all of this, and I think, you know, MBA applicants tend to be a pretty focused bunch, and they like things like, you know, what's my return on investment, or am I going to get this job when I graduate? But we are, in most cases here, talking about 2 years of your life. And, you know, you're going to make friends and have these experiences that will ideally kind of mark you forever, you know, and be really formative. And so you don't want to do that in the wrong place just because of a ranking. So you've got to find the right fit and be brave, you know, choose the school that you think is best equipped to help you learn, to help you get into the industry you want to get into, and to help you forge lifelong friendships, because that's what, you know, the MBA program is. It is an academic program. You are going to learn things. You're going to be with other students, and all that stuff matters. It's not just about the job that you have at the end, or the return on investment, although I recognize those are factors. So I think that's where you just need to be careful and make sure that you're making the right decision for you and not basing your life on what a magazine happened to say in a given year.
Well, terrific. Thank you so much for making the time. And with that, I think we'll leave our readers just with the encouragement to use the rankings as just one of many tools as you begin the process of figuring out exactly where you will get the best business school education for you.
Well said. Thanks so much for having me, Jeanette.
Thanks again.